Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Hello, Donna McGeorge.
Hello, Kathy Love. How are you?
I'm very well. And I have just made the best confession in the world that rather than really getting granular on my podcast preparation, you know where I was, don't you? You know I was outside sitting in the sun and then I ate 3 Freda frogs.
I think that's the best possible preparation for just about everything. So listeners, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, I'm just not sure what preparation I need to do for my next meeting, hop outside, have 3 Fredos. I reckon that'll sort you out.
Yeah, and that was strawberry, so they count as, you know, exponential.
Yeah.
Donna, thank you so much for jumping into what essentially has been a pop-up podcast opportunity that we've both dived into. So you've been a guest a couple of times and we love hearing about what you're up to next, but let me introduce you as the queen of productivity.
Oh, do you think it's royalty? It could be royalty. I'm happy to have that mantle of a crown on my head. Yeah, queen of productivity. Let's go. Let's roll with that.
The queen of pausing and taking a breath. That could be good.
Yes. The queen of space, creating space for what's important.
Yes. That'll work. You're going to need quite a few crowns at the rate we're going. I know you as a social commentator, if you like, and I know you as someone who challenges vanilla kind of thinking. You're a writer, you're a speaker, you're a teacher, all of those things. How do you like to introduce yourself?
I usually say something like I'm a so-called global authority on productivity, mostly because I do a bit of writing, but I'm passionate about, you know, Donna McGeorge, global authority on productivity. Who's passionate about? Giving people space for what's important. That's how typically I describe myself.
Yeah. And the titles and the taglines of your books totally speak to that. The first 2 hours, the 25-minute meeting, the one-day refund is all about what you do with your precious time, but what you can reclaim as well.
That's it. And you kind of hit it earlier when you said, I try to challenge people to think about different ways of working that aren't traditional. So a lot of people come to me and say, hey, can you give me a hack? Often when it comes to time management, people are looking for hacks. What's the hack
yep,
that
yep,
can help
yep.
me, you know, and really what I hear when they're saying that is, can you just tell me something that will make my life a gazillion times easier yep. that is zero effort on my part?
Yeah. Right? Don't we all want that?
Right. And so whilst I don't necessarily, you know, it's not rocket science, a lot of what I teach. A lot of it is fundamental principles, getting right, consistency over time, et cetera. But I do think that what I write about is a little bit different. So if you're thinking time management, you're probably thinking urgency and importance, to-do lists, that sort of stuff. Nah, don't play that game. Play quite a different game.
Yeah, way more practical and way more accessible. Love all of your books. And because you create so much time and opportunity in your vibrant life, if you're not traveling the world or doing new things or thinking about new things, I happen to know that you had quite a steep deadline on your new and latest book.
Yes, I did. Are we allowed to name it yet?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure whether we were doing a little bit of a reveal at some point.
There's virtually no planning, as I've said, Donna.
Good-o. It's called The ChatGPT Revolution. And there's kind of a wee backstory of this, if you don't mind indulging just for a second. About early to mid-January, I started to see lots of commentary coming out around this new tool, this ChatGPT, and people talking about, you know, on the one side, it's very productive. It's going to help everyone. It's going to be amazing. On the other side, oh, my God, it's the beginning of the robots taking over the world and AI is going to kill us all. And I thought, oh, well, given that the word productivity has been thrown around with this, thought I'd better dive in and have a look at it. So I set some time aside to have a look. Got my sister involved because she generates a lot of content for e-learning. And so I wrote her in and said, oh, my God, you've got to check this out. So we kind of did a Zoom checking out ChatGPT with each other and going, oh, my God, Andrew, you don't talk to someone who talks to someone who talks to someone who knows someone who knows someone whose second cousin twice removed is someone who's a journalist. And I get a call out of the blue from one of the major newspapers saying, hey, we believe you're an expert on ChatGPT. Could you please, would you mind being interviewed around the five things we can use ChatGPT for around the house? I go, sure, why not? Any publicity is good publicity. So I then get onto ChatGPT and say, what are five things you can do to help people around the house? And I fessed that up to the journo. We had quite a cool chat. Anyway, it got into the papers on a weekend. Following Monday, I get a call from my publisher saying, hey, we'd like to do a book. We'd like it to be you. You're a trusted voice in the productivity world. So if anyone's going to do a book, you know, we reckon it's your title, your name on it will be good. Here's the trick. We want to try and get it out. We need you to write this book in about 3.5 weeks. Can you do that? Yeah. And I went, I'll give it a crack. I'll give it a red hot go. And here we are.
Oh, wonderful. So the tagline on your book is particularly eye-catching, how to simplify your work and life admin with AI. Why did you focus in on that part of it?
Because admin is one of those things that a lot of people use as a reason to not get done the most important things in their life. So if in a professional context, you'll say, why haven't you had time to do insert important thing? And I'll say, oh, I'm drowning in admin. I'm just drowning in stuff. And at home, often admin falls onto one partner or the other and they end up drowning and not getting things done and things don't go as well as they should. So I thought, how can we create a conversation around how we could begin to use ChatGPT specifically to help us with some of the things that we get stuck with at work and at home? Yep. And also the kind of roles it can play. You know, in the past, when I would talk about productivity, one of my angles would be, you know, if you're not working on what's important, maybe you should delegate stuff around. And so many people would say to me, I don't have anyone to delegate to. Well, now you do.
Now you do.
Everyone now has someone to delegate to. Now, I call it Charlie because ChatGPT is a bit of a mouthful. I just had a call earlier today with someone who calls it Kathy. So it's there you go, Kathy. They actually call theirs Chatty Kathy is what they call their ChatGPT. And so I now have Charlie, who is my eager intern. So no matter what I ask Charlie to do, it comes back eagerly with lots of things to help me with.
It's so interesting you say how it has a character. I say please, I say thank you, I say you've been really helpful, that's great. And I sort of treat it as the eager intern, as I would an eager intern.
Yeah, and my daughter put me onto this. I joked around and said, oh, gosh, I keep saying please and thank you. And even when it gives me a rubbish result, I'll say thanks. Can you have another try with? I'm still being very polite. And she says, we have to be, because what if the machines do take over the world? They want to remember that you were nice.
Yeah, and it literally knows where we live, so best where.
Correct.
Let's define some terms, because let's just start with AI, artificial intelligence, and it's potentially not as new as we think.
No, it's been around forever. So any of you that have bought books on Amazon, every time you go in and it says, first of all, it remembers you because you've logged in and it has all that. But some of the algorithms that sit in the background, that's a word we used to use, were actually AI and machine learning. And so anytime you go to a website like Amazon and it says, you like this book by Donna McGeorge, you might like these books by either me as well or other authors. So it looks at what you buy and it learns what to feed up to you next time you come in. So that's one way we've been using it forever. The other is just about every website now that has some level of customer service. So Telstra, most of the banks, even Amazon, when you go in and usually it's in the bottom right-hand corner of a window and you go in there and you say, this, it says, do you need help? And you go, yes, I need help finding information about blah, 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 blah. Chances are that's being run by a chatbot until it can't answer your question, then sometimes a human kicks in. And so they've been around a really long time. Yeah. So we've had exposure to AI and certainly chatbots for a really long time.
Yeah. So then what is ChatGPT? It's part of the family, but it's different again.
Well, ChatGPT is what's called a generative AI model is the language that they use. And what it means is it's been trained, is the language they use, it's been trained on a massive pile of data. And it means that when I go and ask it a question, it has access to all this data. So another, we don't want to mix too many metaphors, but another metaphor is imagine a librarian that has read every piece of writing ever put in the public domain. So that includes books, websites, articles, magazines, anything that's in the public domain, it has been trained on. And so, and it remembers it, right? So if I go, you know, imagining a librarian that's read everything and I say, well, can you tell me about this? It could draw from 10 different sources to give me an answer. And that is extraordinary. I was only saying to my daughter today, who I'm staying with right now, that I've just inherited my parents' 1963 set of 1963 Encyclopedia Britannica, leather bound. Oh. And we immediately looked them up wondering if they were worth any money. And they're not. They're just simply simply a nostalgia thing. And I thought, look how far we've come.
Yeah.
Right? They were the font of all knowledge and wisdom when I was growing up. Now I've got access to this extraordinary amount of data in order to help me do whatever it is I need to do.
What are you using more, Google or ChatGPT?
Well, it depends because they're two different things. So I use ChatGPT if I'm trying to, if I'm looking for inspiration, trying to get creative, maybe writing an article, or I've got to write an email and I don't know where to start, or I'm doing a proposal and I don't quite know where to start. I used to use Google to help me design programs because I just go to Google and say, you know, clients ask me to run a program on, I don't know, new ways of working as an example. If it was stuff that wasn't, you know, right in my sweet spot. So I don't have a look at what other people were doing and go, oh, okay, now I'm inspired, now I know what to build. Now I go to Charlie and say, write me a two-day program on, you know, new ways of working for people who work in local government. And it will give me a two-day program. Now, what I, and if any, just in case anyone's wondering, let's just deal with the elephant in the room for a moment. Did I use ChatGPT to help me write my ChatGPT book? And the answer is, of course, I did. And a lot of people just assume that that means I said to ChatGPT, write me a 35,000 word book on this topic, and I just let it generate and I filed my nails while it was doing that. And it's not like that at all. But it would generate, like if I was stuck, I'm like, oh, okay, I want three more reasons that a working parent or three more ways in which a working parent could use ChatGPT to take back time. Hey, Charlie, what are three or 10, actually, I always ask it, what are 10 ways? And that would prompt some inspiration. And then if it gave me some kind of, you know, this is a background in academic writing from back in my olden days of being at uni, any kind of declarative statement, you would often have to back up because there's no such thing as an original thought, right? So who said that? So then I'd go over to Google and say, here's the statement. Where'd that come from? Because I want to reference appropriately. So in terms of writing a book, I was in and out of both of them. But I would say mostly now I'm in Charlie for everything. Give me, I'm heading to France, give me an itinerary. I need a meal plan. I'm doing a dinner party. I've got someone who's a celiac. Give me a really yummy menu, three-course menu that can be done in 25 minutes or less, right? So straight in there now for that sort of stuff.
It seems to bring that content together in a very practical way that gives you a place to start and to work from rather than having a browser open and getting four or five different sources of really valuable content, but then you've got to read and have multiple tabs open and do the analysis and synthesis yourself. So I love it.
That's what it used to be, and that's what's saving the time. Yeah. Right. So if me to write a 700 word article on a particular topic or blog or whatever, I'd go and find 10 articles or book references, read them, synthesize, write the article. Now there's at a minimum 3 hours.
Yeah.
It takes me now to write an article, I reckon an hour.
Yeah.
You know, an hour.
Yeah. So let's have a little peek between the pages of the chat. Have you got one there? Look at that. Donna Waves' book in the air. Tell us about the chapters and the content and what people can expect.
Sure. So I always write, if anyone's read any of my books, you'll know what to expect from the very beginning. There's always usually some kind of anecdote story to begin with, then lots of really cool information, and then super practical, actual things to do. So I call them experiments. So at the end, there's always an experiment. So that's the overall structure. And in this one, part one is get curious. So it gives you a little bit of background and info about AI, a bit of history, you know, what you can expect. And I do talk about the pros and cons, you know, like it's, there's a whole bunch of good things and there's a whole bunch of watch out as well. I mean, it's a dirty, rotten liar sometimes. Like yep. It tells you stuff yep. and then I go and check it on Google and it's like, that never happened. They never said it. That's not even a thing, right?
I know, right? So, it's, yeah.
And then the second half is around getting productive. So it's literally the roles and the way I've written it is, you know, here are the roles that it can perform for you. So if I'm at work, I now have a new virtual team and it's things like I can now have an HR admin, a personal assistant, a brainstormer, a summarizer, a tactician, a business consultant, a strategist. Mm-hmm. They're the roles I now have available to me. And then at home, same. I now have a meal planner or dietary strategist, a travel agent, a personal trainer, entertainment curator, personal shopper, and homework tutor. Now, I say that very, I pause on that one because there's a lot of controversy around kids using ChatGPT for homework. So I address that in the book as well. So it's really about saying you're not on your own. No, you don't have to be on your own ever again. You've always got someone who can help you when you're stuck.
Yeah. Like many, many elements of technology, it's only as good as you use it. And I'm very aware that my ability to prompt Charlie is a lot better than it was 2 and 3 months ago. What are your thoughts on the prompts and just honing your skills on that front?
Well, what a great question. There's a whole chapter on that in my book. So, and I talk about the three P's of effective prompt. And the first one is perspective. You kind of got to tell it where you're coming from and what you're trying to do. So it might be, in fact, I'll say all three there, perspective, purpose, and personality. Right? The other three things I think are really useful. So purpose might be I'm writing a blog. Perspective, for senior leaders in the finance industry who are wanting to level up, right? Yeah. So that's the perspective. And then the personality, so purpose, blog, perspective, finance people, and personality is, and I need it in an engaging and conversational style or a professional style or in the style of Harvard Business Review or in the style of a men's health magazine. Like, you know, whatever you want to write in the style of, you can tell it to. So I've referred to it as an eager intern with a hangover is often how I refer to it. So this eager intern that I've got working by my side and I give them instructions and what they give back to me, they're so eager. They so want to please you, as does Charlie. Yet if you give really bad instructions, it'll give you bad work. So the difference between having a human intern and Charlie is that you can actually say to Charlie, this is rubbish. However, I've even said to it once, my bad.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I wasn't clear.
And so then I say, like, that's not what I wanted. Here's what I wanted. The more context you give it. Now, there is something going around that's called a mega prompt, right? So you can literally, I've seen them. They're literally, you know, paragraphs of information that you're putting in, and the more you put in, the more context, the more information you get this extraordinary result. Mm-hmm. Having said that, in my experience, it's at best 80%.
Yeah,
at best.
Yeah,
usually about half baked.
Yeah, I found in my experience that I am slowing down and reading more carefully what ChatGPT has provided me. And not rushing to reprompt. because I need to learn just that little bit faster than ChatGPT how to wrangle the good stuff out of it. And I'll often look at it and even do something and come back to it and read it again and think very carefully about what I want it to do next and what I want it to do differently. When I was just kind of firing off prompts, it was because I hadn't done enough analysis of what it had very kindly given me. And that's just slowing me down to kind of prompt better.
Yeah, and look, I'll send you this so you can put it in the note for this episode. I've got a prompt guide. And it's just some example prompts across all of those roles that I talked about earlier for people to get in and have a play and have a look at the results that they get. I haven't investigated this, but I've just found out in the last 2 weeks or so, it's released this ability for you to permanently teach it. So the first of it is exactly as you say, get used to writing prompts and using prompts and seeing the results you get, then figure out, what's the information that I'd love it to permanently have on file about me? Now, before you all get very nervous, this is not personal information. It's not bank details. It's just
good luck with that.
Donna McGeorge is a productivity author. She's written these three books. I will now be able to put, if I wanted to, the PDFs of my books up there. And before anyone says, but oh my goodness, couldn't someone just steal your book? My book's already in there. It's already in the public domain. It's written word, ChatGPT. Charlie already has access to my content. If someone wanted to say, give me the exact content of Donna McGeorge's book for free, or power to you, give it a crack. I don't think it will quite get it right. But
it's not going to be as good to read for sure.
No, not at all. So this new capability means that I can store my books. I can store my bio. I've already taught it how to write like me. Here's three chapters of my book. You're an expert writing analyzer. Give me an analysis of my writing style in two sentences or less. And it says, your writing style is very engaging and conversational. You use lots of anecdotes and rhetorical questions. Thank you. So I can store that now. And I can say, anytime I ask it to write, I want you to be drawing the content from my book. So I'm not plagiarizing the rest of the world. And I want you to write it in my usual style. I haven't tested that yet, but that's the new level of capability that it has, which I think is awesome for any thought leaders or people that do a lot of written communication.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we love to chat with Allied Health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscope here. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an Allied Health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
So let's go back to the life admin piece. And at the moment, there's a very generous offer with ChatGPT with free access, and there is one paid level and there'll be more emerging, I'm sure. So if we think of the freemium ChatGPT, I think it'd be fun to kind of list up some ways that it can support life admin on a everyday, all day, every day kind of domestic approach. What are your kind of suggestions on that front?
Yeah, so probably the one, you know, and I know this because I know a lot of working parents, and the question that bugs them most when they get home is, what's for dinner?
What's for What's for dinner?
And depending on how your day's been, depending on how you respond to that, frankly. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I think it's really useful for is meal planning. And if you've already been, I've never been much of a meal planner until Charlie came along, because I couldn't be bothered with, you know, Google was probably my best thing, or I'd get some kind of recipe books and they always felt too complicated and it just felt a bit too hard. Whereas now I go to Charlie and say, I want 7 days of meals. I'm not quite, but close to, I'm borderline type 2 diabetes, and I've only got 30 minutes to prepare meals in the evenings. Give me a 7-day meal plan. For dinner only. I'm not worried about breakfast and lunch. And so it does. And it gives you recipes and everything. And then I say, now generate a shopping list for this in the same order as the supermarket. Now that's just saved me a heap of time, because now I zip around the supermarket in order. I can now print that out and stick it on the fridge, which means anyone says, what's for dinner? Check out the fridge.
Still, I could also delegate the whole lot.
Well, that's what
you can delegate the whole lot to somebody else.
What if you've got preteens or just early teenagers who might still be at an age where they're quite interested in having a crack at playing around it? I mean, late age teenagers, maybe not so much. I know it depends, but now I might say, now generate a meal plan that between the ages of, say, 12 and 14 could cook without supervision. Mm. What might that meal plan look like?
Yeah.
And so keep going until you're like, I've now somehow freed up myself a big chunk of time. Really good for finicky eaters. I don't like peas, so I would say no peas. Sometimes for almost type 2 diabetes, there's a lot, it overloads on the salmon, and I'll be like, okay, I only want one salmon meal. I don't want to eat salmon 4 times a week, right? So you just keep telling it until you get the right thing. So that's meal planning.
Yep.
Planning trips is really easy. So again, with the free stuff, you know, we're about to head off on a road trip, or we're going up to Far North Queensland or whatever. Give it context. We're a family of 5, 3 kids these ages. They have interest in, you know, so if I use my daughter as an example, interest in manga, you know, Japanese cartoon. And it might find some obscure little museum somewhere that you would never have found. Right, and it might find that for you. So it'll give you a plan. It'll even say, you know, we want to do the main beaches. We want to do theme parks. Tell it what you want to do, and it'll lay you out an itinerary.
Yeah.
If you have the paid version, and I know we're not really talking about that, but you can actually hook it up to Expedia, and it can also link you to make bookings and things like that. So that's a separate thing. But I think the one that really, I always think about, what's the stuff that gets into your head, and you're like, I haven't got an answer. I'm stuck. I'm stuck. I'm stuck. So my 55-year-old sister-in-law is interested in country and western 80s music. She also likes soaking in hot baths. Give me 10 suggestions for a birthday present that costs $75 or less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. I've loved it for gifts. Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it for travel. Right down to the train timetable.
What?
And how much trips take. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The only warning on the label was I asked it to do an itinerary around France, mostly using rail travel, and I wanted to get to a kind of a coastal town that's a bit off the beaten track. So it gave me this beautiful itinerary. Anyway, the rail trip between one town and this coastal town was 4 hours in each direction. And I'm like, oh, gee. And then when I actually looked it up on Google Maps, it was a 20-minute drive. But because there wasn't a logical way to get there by rail straight across, you had to go up to another town, change to a train, come around to this massive loop. Yeah. So there is still an aspect of this that we need to check. But you know, even anyone with small kids, you know, I've got another birthday party coming up. Give me 10 and I always say, give me 10 examples, not just one. Give me 10 examples of a birthday gift for an 8-year-old boy who it likes the Avengers, that doesn't cost me more than $30, right? Too easy.
Yeah. Any other ways? Could it be used in budgeting or?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But let's just put the warning on the label here that says it's not a financial planner. It is not a bank. I would not be putting any personal information in there. Yeah. But you could say, these are my financial goals. Be as if you are a financial planner in Australia according to Australian banking and regulatory requirements, mm-hmm. and give me a plan. Here's my, if you want it, here's my wages. It's up to you. I earn this much, or I have this much disposable income. Put a savings plan together for me, or put a budget together for me. But let me kind of flip it back here. Now, you could just say straight up, you're a financial planner. I want to set some solid financial goals. Asking them one at a time, what are 10 questions you could ask me that could help you create a financial plan for me?
Yeah.
And so now you're getting it to coach you or ask you questions or interview you so you can give it answers, and then it can generate a plan for you.
How awesome is that? You've got to be pretty courageous to kind of, yeah, I think so. I think sometimes you don't always know the question you want to ask. And some of the things that ChatGPT may well be able to help you with, you may have been avoiding in real life anyways. So,
right. And that's the glory of it, right? Yeah. So provided you're reasonably discreet about what person, you're not going to say, hi, my name's Sonia McGeorge, global authority on productivity, and I frequently write, now I'm going to ask you a bunch of personal questions, and the rest of the world may somehow stumble across that. No way. But let's say, you know, I have heard people say, I'm stuck on what my next job should be. So, Charlie, you are a professional careers coach and advisor. I've come to you to get advice on what my next move should be in my career. Asking them one at a time, what are 10 questions you could ask me that could help me make some decisions about my next move? So this idea of you giving it a role to play, you're a careers advisor or counselor, you're a personal coach or a life coach, you're a financial planner, you're a Michelin star chef. Right? Yeah. Like, you tell it what you'd like it to be and then ask it. Good one. Sorry, I get very excited about this. One that I found really useful was writing a bio. Very hard for me to write about myself. I can say I think I'm amazing, but you've got to find the right words for a bio. So I said to it, interview me with an intention that you're going to write a bio that would work for Forbes magazine. Ask me 10 questions one at a time to generate enough information for you to write me that bio. Now, I'm doing a bit of word salad with that. It was much more concise when I did it. But in effect, it interviewed me, generated me an awesome bio.
And how happy were you with the outcome?
Probably embarrassed because Charlie's shameless, right? So whereas when I'm writing about myself or talking about myself, I have a fairly strong humility frame. I don't want to overly talk about myself. Whereas Charlie just says, Sonia McGeorge is awesome, global authority, best-selling author. Like, it's, you know, and in the end of it, I'm reading it going, you're actually pretty good.
Yeah, who's she?
Yeah. And I think the temptation is to water it down. Mm. But, you know, I remember one of my mentors ages ago said that when you're writing about yourself or talking about yourself, sometimes you need something like a trailer director. So a trailer director for a movie, they never use the actual director because they'll never say the things that the idea of a trailer director is to get them to go to the movie, right? So you want a trailer director that will say all the awesome things about you that you don't think to say about yourself. Now, Charlie is awesome at that.
Yeah. No filter, less of a filter, less humility even. You mentioned earlier about teens, and I sort of want to kind of bring this down to kids. We can put some age around it, but it kind of doesn't blow my mind, though. I sit with absolute curiosity about how kids will be growing up and be educated with tools like this. Is that something you've kind of thought about? I know we've been talking about it in our family. Like, what does education look like going forward? What will childhood look like going forward?
Look, the way in which information is wildly available to us on our phones anyway right now means that kids my daughter is a millennial, so she's in her early 30s. She has grown up with information available at her fingertips from the moment she could move her fingers around, grasp things, right? I remember watching her pick up a mouse once and it was like, wow, she knew exactly what to do with it. Like, they're born knowing what to do with it. And her life, she grew up through the era where we all thought the internet was going to take everyone's jobs, ruin our lives, just destroy shopping, no one will ever have real books anymore, all the stuff people freaked out about. And she's turned out fine. Thank you very much. So this is just another layer of information at fingertips. In our days, we'd have to, I shouldn't assume that we're of a similar era. In my day, I'd have to go down with a bag full of coins, down to the library and photocopy books in order to do my assignments. In my daughter's day, she was able to access all the ebooks online that she needed. Now we've got every book on the planet available to us whenever we need. So the thing that a lot of people worry about is, will it dumb our kids down? Now, television didn't, calculators didn't, the internet hasn't. Mm. I don't believe AI is going to either. It will potentially augment their thinking is what I believe.
Yep.
So what do I think about this? It will stretch me beyond. It gives me, you know, even when I say, if you were to say, you know, write me an essay about familial relationships that existed in Romeo and Juliet, right? Now, I could say, ChatGPT, write me that essay, and it could write me an okay essay. It could be, then it teaches me, that's what a good essay should look like. That's the kind of things I should be thinking about, right? So it's a great teaching tool, I believe.
Yeah.
But, yes, we're going to have to change education. Maybe written assessment is not the best way now to assess whether people understand a given topic or not.
Mm. Oh, look, I'm with you on that. I see it as another tool to be understood and not so much mastered, but worked with. And it's not as though you can put it in the cupboard and think it's not going to play a role. So I must admit, if I was a educator or a school principal or the dean of a university, I would be very busy right now understanding first how, from a staffing point of view, where the edges of it are, but then parents and kids themselves, because it's got to work right down the layers, I think.
Well, if I was an educator, I would right now be using it to help me create curriculum, write session plans. You know, I'd be pushing it to be creative. You know, sometimes, so these are the kinds of things we don't have time for, right? So I'm a busy school teacher, and I know school teachers are crazy busy beyond what we can imagine. And so imagine now you could get a term's worth of curriculum, you know, out, ready to go on a particular topic, ready to go. So I need a curriculum on this topic for this age that incorporates lots of physical activities. We're allowed to go and do one field trip, put all the parameters in, boom, out comes a curriculum in a matter of minutes. Yep. That might have normally taken weeks to do.
Now,
I just think there's so much advantage on both sides of the education.
And I think after that wonderful prompt and you get all that goodness and you've run through it, you'd say, and please, Charlie, provide me with 10 examples of assessment tasks that measure capabilities on the back of this curriculum.
That don't involve written.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we're trying now, if I've always thought it was only ever a small percentage of kids that genuinely cheat. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe if there's school teachers listening right now, they'd be going, oh, my God, no, kids will always find. I don't think so. I never did when I was a kid. I quite enjoyed learning, and I know there's a large percentage of kids that do enjoy learning. So you could say, I don't want to kind of change the rules for the small percentage of kids because kids will always figure out a way to cheat. But I do think I'm loving this notion of revolutionising. There will be a bit of a revolution learning around having to move away from the written. But not only that, this is going to change. It's a game changer for kids, adults, people who have literacy issues.
Yeah.
So there's this beautiful story that came out of America where it was in the Washington Post, I think, where a plumber goes to fix a bloke toilet or something, block fixes it up, and then they get into a conversation. And it was a business person. Business person says, so do you like plumbing? And the guy says, yeah, I don't mind. It's really all I could do, you know. I've always had a dream. I'm short-circuiting the conversation. I've always had a dream of doing swimming pools with a difference and extraordinary landscaping and stuff like that. And the businessman says, well, why haven't you ever done that? And he says, well, I left school when I was like 14. I was late to be diagnosed with dyslexia. So I was treated like I was dumb. And so I'm just dumb, right? And so I've got poor literacy. I don't know how to spell. And so the best I can do is I'll be there at 5 to fix your toilet. He said, to do proposals and that kind of stuff would be too hard. So this guy writes a little app for him that's based on ChatGPT. He puts in things like, dear Kathy, I'll send you, Y-O-U-S-E, a quote, Q-O-U-T-E, Friday, Bob. And that turns into, dear Kathy, looking really forward to working with you on this project. I'll be able to send you a quote through on Friday. You know, best wishes, have a great weekend, Bob. Now, that's a game changer. That's a literacy game changer. And I just think there's that the positive aspects of that for kids who might have learning difficulties or things like dyslexia or whatever, to be able to play catch-ups, really. It's closing the gap, closing the literacy gap.
Yeah. We can expand that out to people with disabilities more broadly, or impairments. And then the outcome of that impairment is that they have a disability with communicating as well. So, you know, that's a field that we've sort of got our eye on quite closely as well, about how it will support participation and lifestyles of people with disabilities as well. I'm not sure over what time frame we're going to see kind of the revolution there, but super excited about the opportunities on that front.
Yeah, and look, and the flip side is I've been talking to a guy recently who writes AI programs that basically observe a human doing highly repetitive tasks, and then it writes a program. But the AI aspect of it is it goes and draws information and looks for patterns. So he showed me this gorgeous one recently that basically empties out your inbox. And so it watches, right. So you can train it. Here are some standard responses that I'd like to train you in. This is kind of the work I do. And I watched it run on an inbox that had, oh, I don't know, several hundred emails in it, and it sorted, replied automatically to a few, deleted a few, popped a few into files, and it ended up with three at the end that said, these need a human response because they're a little bit different to the norm.
Wow.
Yeah, and that, I thought, look, maybe the average person doesn't use that, but there's so many organisations that have an email inbox that the public just go into. Right? Mm-hmm. So it might be a business, and there's one inbox and someone has to then process those. Well, this is an initial processing
triaged
tool. Mm. Right, triaged, but even beyond triaged, because it answers. It has a look and says, what are the common FAQs? What are the common FAQs? Here are the common answers. Away it goes. Like incredible.
Goosebumps.
Goosebumps.
Your book has been selling off the shelves. What feedback have you had about the book?
It's most of the feedback is it's a classic Donna McGeorge, super practical, helping make something that could have been really complex, really easy, and accessible to just about everyone. That's been most of the feedback. Look, for all I know, some people could hate it. They just haven't told me. So far the feedback's been very positive and the reviews have been very good.
Yeah, so we must make sure we put some links into where they can get it. And what would you say to people who sort of think it doesn't apply to me yet, the ChatGPT?
Well, the yet is the is the important part of that question, that statement, because it's coming. So how I tend to think about it is if I looked at your mobile phone, your smartphone, chances are there's probably pages of apps. Most people have pages of apps on their phone, and they've grown organically as, you know, I've realised, oh, there's a thing I need to do, or there's a better weather app, or there's a something app that I quite like, or Spotify or something, and it grows organically, so you end up having piles of apps on your phone. It's the same with AI. So ChatGPT for the moment, for me, is just like I've bought the phone and that's the main thing I'm using is it for a phone, right? But it's kind of my homework at the moment is there are hundreds of apps that are AI-based. So how to create, you put in a bit of information, it generates a PowerPoint deck for you. You put in a video, a raw video, like a video that we're taking. I know that a lot of people are listening to this, but we're also on a video Zoom. We could put this in, and there's editing tools that will automatically edit this recording, cutting out ums and ahs and slow bits and stuff like that, and it will edit it for you. So there's just two examples. There are so many examples of how it's working. So I would say, look, it's okay if you want to sit back and wait. You know, wait till there's enough of a reason for you to use it. And I would further add, it's probably time to get a bit curious about it, because you don't want to be left behind with this, because it is a thing. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger and brighter and easier and more wonderful. You may as well get on board with it now.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add in before we click off from this conversation?
I don't think so. I think we'll put a link in the notes around how to get into ChatGPT. It's very easy to get a free account. It doesn't cost you anything to go and play with this. So just, go log in, grab the prompt guide that we're going to have as part of these notes, go play and just see what you see.
Have some fun.
Yeah.
Donna, thank you so much as always. Goodness knows what we'll be talking about next time. I'm sure there will be something popping up.
Seriously, Kathy, if you'd have said to me at the end of the last one, I'll see you in 6 months or so after you write your next book, I'd have said no. Like, no, I won't be writing another book. And here we are.
Here we are. All good. Thanks, Donna.
All right. See you, Kathy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.